It's time once again for another edition of Getting to Know You. Our guest this month is one of our founders, Becky Buckner from North Carolina. To escort us on this journey, let's welcome our host, Susie B. from Tennessee.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's edition of Getting to Know You. And I don't know anyone more apt for this night's edition than Becky Buckner from North Carolina. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you, Susie.
We're going to get started with just some basic questions. And of course, after I get to ask all of my questions, then each of you will get an opportunity to ask one of your own. So let's get started. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born and raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in the western part of North Carolina, and grew up there until I finished high school and then went off to the rehab center for the blind.
Okay, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have this one sister that's a real dynamite, and she's living in Winston-Salem right now. And we had a brother who was, he was 10 years older than I. He passed away a few years ago.
Okay. Well, I know Linda does. Did your brother also have a vision problem?
Yes, all three of us had RP, retinitis pigmentosa.
Did you, when you got ready to go to school, did you go to public school?
Yes, I did. It was actually, however, a sight-saving class, but it was in the city school system. And we had, of course, you know, the large print books and special type of chalkboard that didn't have any glare on it. And I could see enough then, you know, that I could see the blackboard and I could read easily with the large print books, but that just went to the seventh grade.
Okay, well, after seventh grade, what happened then? Did you go to the school for the blind, or were you still able to stay in public school?
I stayed in public school and did okay up until I got into high school, and as of course, as everybody with RP knows, all this time you're losing vision. And by the time I got into high school, I was having more difficulty trying to read. And I, in fact, had to get a reader my last 2 years of high school.
Having always read your own material, was it hard to adjust to having somebody read to you? Was that hard to comprehend?
Yeah, you know, you have to learn to listen, and I'm not sure at that point in my life I had really learned a whole lot about listening, you know, as someone read to you to try to hear what you need to be getting out of it or picking out of it. I guess I did okay. I managed to graduate.
Good deal. When you were in school, besides your regular curriculum, were you involved in sports, music, drama, any other activities?
I was in the glee club in high school, but that was the only thing, I think. I don't recall any others. I know I played when I was in elementary school. I played in the band in the little, you know, they had music class, I guess is what you'd say. And I played the clarinet. And I could actually see some of the notes on the page back then. But, of course, that didn't last too many years. I think I was in music maybe a couple of years.
Did you find the clarinet had probably a lot more keys than it needed?
Yeah, I know. I think you said you played the clarinet also. Yeah, that was a interesting instrument. I enjoyed playing it. Mine was just one piece. You know, the mouthpiece came off, but the rest of it, it wasn't a wooden one. It was, I guess, some type of metal. So I had to carry around this long case everywhere I went at that time.
That's the kind I had, too, until I was maybe a junior in high school. We'll get back to the Glee Club in a few minutes, but were you allowed to take physical education in high school? I know a lot of people who went to public school, they said they were exempt from physical ed.
I don't think I did take physical ed. You have to remember, this is a long time ago, but I don't remember, so I must have been one of those exempt.
Okay, let's go back a little bit. When you were growing up, and this was before high school, I would guess, were you a tomboy?
You've been talking to my sister, haven't you? Yeah, I was a tomboy. We had mostly boys in our neighborhood, and I loved to be outside. And Linda, she never cared too much about. She'd rather stay inside and play with her dolls. But I just was too rambunctious, I guess, to stay inside. So I was always outside playing. And then I got to where I was pretty good at. We had this perfect tree in our front yard for climbing. And so I did spend quite a bit of time in that tree.
Well, could you run faster than the boys to get up in that tree before they could tackle you?
Oh yeah, they didn't mess with my tree, but it was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed my childhood.
All right, you mentioned earlier about the Glee Club. Is there a special event in high school that stands out that includes the Glee Club?
One year we played, we sang at the fair, the Dixie Classic Fair, and it was a big thing because Winston-Salem's a pretty good-sized town. And so they'd have different events at each night at the grandstand, and so our Glee Club sang one night, and boy, we just really thought we were hot stuff. You know, we were out there, and it was of course open, but we felt really special that night, and it was fun.
That was special, and that's a special memory you'll always have. Okay, you have graduated from high school. What did you do right after graduating from high school?
That fall, I went to the North Carolina Rehab Center for the Blind, which is between Durham, really between Durham and Raleigh, in a little town called Butner. So I started there in, I guess it was September of 62. I was there for about till February of 63. And learned some Braille. I'd never had any Braille before. Learned some Braille, which I'm really glad I did. Even though I'm not great at it, I can make notes for myself with it. And in fact, I had to also use that Braille when I started working to label charts and things like that, and telephone numbers and stuff.
Okay, while you were at the rehab center, is there anything that kind of stands out that you did while you were there?
I had a really good time. It was, I guess, the first time I'd really ever been away from home except for 1 week in church camp when I was just a little kid. Cried the whole time I was there that week, but I was so homesick. But this was the first time, I just had a lot of fun. There were a lot of really nice other people there my age, and it was just it was fun, and learning, learn king, travel, of course, and had some classes with to do with medical transcription. A lady there taught, you had typing class. Of course, we had typing even when we were in grammar school. We started typing in that sight-saving class. So, knew how to type. But she had some old dictabelts that she had gotten from somewhere that had some medical terminology and reports like that on it. And I got sort of exposed a little bit to medical transcription there also.
Dictabelts, those are the things that little flat, but it's round. You slide it on those little things and then on those little posts, and then you push the pedal to hear it while you type a little bit.
You got it. Did you do that kind of work too? Yeah, we call them dictabelts, and to this day, I have dreams sometimes about working in my office, and it was back when I was still using the dictabelts. You know, we graduated, of course, to cassette tapes and stuff like that, but I have this dream every now and then where I'm working in my office, and I've got stacks and stacks of charts, all with the blue belt on them, waiting to be transcribed. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do with all this work? How am I going to? And I was the only one doing it, because I worked in the Department of Psychiatry, and it wasn't, I wish in a way that, like Linda Miller here, that I had worked and gotten more work from other departments to get more exposure, but mine was just in psychiatry. But in this dream, I kept thinking, what am I going to do to get all this work done? And then in my dream, I would think, oh, I'm retired now. I don't have to worry about this. It's funny that I keep dreaming that dream every now and then.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I took that class in high school, and I thought that was what I was going to do when I got out of high school. I would work at State Farm. My sister-in-law had done that. That was that was an experience. I think you did something else. Well, at the rehab center, is that where you met Carl?
That is where I met Carl. He was from Roanoke Rapids, which was on the other end of the state from where I grew up, you know, that was far northeastern part of the state. And I guess it was meant for us to meet there because we were so otherwise so far apart. But, yep, we met there, and he was a little more intense on, you know, getting to know me more. And I was thinking, well, no, I don't want to just date one fella. I want to, you know, I was just 19 years old. But we did keep seeing each other. And when I left the rehab center and went to Duke, where they had a medical transcription training pool that was sponsored by the Commission for the Blind, he would come over to Durham on the weekends a lot of times to see me. I was living at the Y. All the girls that were doing the transcription lived at the YWCA.
All right, you said you worked in this typing pool at, not typing pool, but this transcription pool at Duke. How long did that last? And did you change departments or change jobs?
It was for a year, and it was located in the medical outpatient clinic, and that's where we got most of our dictation. Our instructor, Ms. Long, would go to other departments and try to get some work for us to do. And then, of course, she had to proof everything that we did, and because it was actually going into a chart eventually. But we learned a lot to do with medical transcription. You know, it's sort of a learn-as-you-go type of thing. But, yeah, that went for a year. Then I got an opportunity to get a job there at Duke as I was finishing up. A lady that was working in the Department of Psychiatry was also blind, and she was getting married and moving out of town. So she told the director, she said, you know, I really would like for another blind person to get this job. So Dr. Heim came down to the transcription pool and talked to Ms. Long and said, do you have anybody that's ready to leave or finish that might be interested? And so she asked us, and I said, oh, yeah, I would, because it was, I had been there just about a year now. This is January. And so I got that job, started in January the 8th of 1964.
And did you get fired, or how long did you keep that?
I stayed there for 35 years, Susie, in the same department, doing the same type of work for the majority of the time. They did change our offices around sometimes, and I moved to different parts of the hospital, but it was the whole time was in that one department, 35 years.
That's a pretty good track record. I hope they gave you a party when you left.
They did, and it was fun. They were very good to me while I was there, and I worked hard for them, so it was mutual.
I'm sure you did. Okay, to basic type things, how do you handle bill paying and shopping and going for appointments? This would involve not only, this would also involve transportation.
My husband, Carl, is a high partial, and he actually got his driver's license. He could drive during the daytime. So, you know, and we did everything together. We've always done everything together. We'd go shopping. We do checks and stuff like that. Of course, now everything's drafted. You don't have to worry about writing checks very much. But we've always done everything together. Now, at that time, he was working down at the line, at the beginning of our marriage, he was working at the Lions Club Industries for the blind for 5 years. And then he got an opportunity to get a job at Duke also over in the university side in a division of botany called Phytotron. And that had to do with a lot of research, plant research. And he worked on the maintenance end of all of that, not so much directly with the research, but making sure the buildings were kept like they were supposed to, and they would say, we need a greenhouse that's set up this way, and they would have to, you know, prepare it for that particular research. But otherwise, we've done everything very much together. We've been married 55 years, 56 coming up on June the 5th. Linda and I had a double wedding in 1965, and that was quite a summer. There were a lot of weddings at our church that summer.
That was quite a deal. I have never been to a double wedding. I've read about them in books, but I've never been to one. All right, you and Carl have been married almost 56 years. Do you all have any children?
We have one son. We were actually married for about 6 years before we had him, mainly because we had first decided not to have children because of the RP. But my brother had children. They were okay. Linda had a daughter, and she was okay. And I know, of course, still that it can skip generations, but we did have Stephen in 1971, and he was fine. He's still fine as far as the RP's concerned. But he's our one and only. He is going to be 50 years old in July. Oh, my gosh.
Do you have any grandchildren?
His first wife had two children, and he adopted them. They were very young, but like 4 and 5 or 4 and 6. And Stephen and Donna did not have any children of their own. I really think Stephen was afraid to have children. But we've lost touch with them after Donna and Stephen divorced. They were living in Kansas, and so we, were really not able to keep up with them very much.
But you do have a grand dog, right?
We did have a grand dog. Well, we bless his little heart. We had to put her, actually, down. Soon to be, it'll be 2 years. It was 2 years this past January. Her name was Cupid. And she was I forget what she's called. Oh, she had long legs, but she's just a little thing. She didn't weigh about 11, 12 pounds. I can't think of the name. I wish Carl was in here. Anyway, she was a precious thing, and we had her for almost 15 years.
Okay, for pastime, hobbies. Do you have any hobbies?
This place around here is one of my biggest hobbies, I guess. I love to piddle on this computer here and see what trouble I can get into so that Terry has to straighten me back out. I enjoy music a lot. I love to play music and listen to music, read books, and what time I'm not trying to keep Carl out of trouble. That's most of what I'm doing.
Do you have any particular type of books that you like, or do you enjoy a big variety? And do you have a special author?
I love lots of different kinds of books. I like ones that other people have read. That's where my sources mostly, when other people say, I just read this really good book, and I can't even remember the names of authors anymore. My memory's getting so bad, but I read all different kinds of books. I don't particularly care for superstitious kind of books, or really way out kind of books. I don't like horror books, but I guess I mostly like, the sort of light, enjoyable books. I don't necessarily have to be scared to death or listen to a bunch of people being killed.
Science fiction, is that the word you were looking for?
Thank you, that's it.
Don't like them either. I was trying to think of, maybe I'll think of it in a minute. What delete cause? Oh, where we talk to him about Jaws. He calls it something science fiction instead of scientific. How did you learn? You can absolutely tell me this. How did you learn about Out of Sight? I think you were kind of on the cutting edge.
That's a slip, but Susie, we'll forgive you for that. This is VIP Conduit. Oh, that's funny. I was with some of the other guys that wanted to see about starting a new site. There was some things going on FTP that we weren't too happy with. And so anyway, we decided to try going out on our own and see what would happen. And so Parker and Terry and Barry and Dennis, myself, Anita, started VIP Conduit, and that was in 2005.
Well, I gave myself away since I do this interview at two different places. There you go. I'm doing pretty well not to have thrown too many other clogs in here. What is your favorite part about the site? Or do you have a favorite part?
Well, of course, it's the people. I mean, that's what makes up any site, I think. Now, what the site has to offer makes a difference, of course. But and over here on VIP, I think music is the biggest part of this site, whereas other, you know, other sites have other focuses. So it's whatever the person, whatever you want to do, you can. There are so many sites now that some I don't even know about yet. I'm always hearing about a different site that somebody's been on that's a chat site for the blind, and there must be at least a half a dozen or more now, but I'm sure they all have their own focus of what they want to offer people. I think probably, you know, I better not say that the folks over here are a little bit older. No, just strike that, although we are. But anyway, I know Out of Sight has a lot of games, and so that's what draws people over there. I think over here it's just chatter and a lot of music events.
Yeah, you have to come over here to know what's on the news. The news is usually too depressing for me to even watch, so I come over here and people talking about stuff, and that's how you catch up on the news. Is there anything that you would like to add that we haven't covered? I feel like there is, but I'm counting on you to remember what it was.
Oh boy, are we in trouble. No, I just would like to say how much I've enjoyed VIP, and the people that I've met over here have become some of my very closest friends, and I thoroughly enjoy it even today. We've lost a lot of, you know, in 15 years, we've lost a lot of our members, and we get new ones, but it's just like life, you know, you make good friends, and then sometimes they pass on, but I just have enjoyed meeting all the people that I have met from all over the world, really.
Well, we may lose them, but we don't lose the memories of them. Well, folks, I think that I have finished everything I can think of to ask her. So now you have a chance to ask questions. I would just like to remind you to, if you're keyed up and somebody gets the key before you do, let go of the key. Otherwise, Becky won't get a chance to answer the question. And just key up again, because there's going to be plenty of time for everybody to ask one question. If we have time, then you may get a chance to ask a second one. But please just stick to one. And folks, here's our Becky.
Hey, hi, Becky. And I didn't know you played clarinet back in school. And I did as well. And Susie, too, played clarinet. So it must have been a popular instrument. And we could have played trios together. I had, unfortunately, had a metal clarinet like the one you had. And I sat on it one day, and yes, I was in trouble. And we had to get a repairman to fix the thing again. But anyway, yeah, do you read or listen to podcasts and anything else along this way that you could tell us about, Becky?
You know, Rick, I'm glad I didn't sit on my clarinet. That wouldn't have been too comfy. I've never really gotten into podcasts, but I would like to. Now, I've probably listened to some, didn't even know that's what I was listening to, but boy, that's the thing nowadays, you know. Everybody's doing podcasts, and they're on any subject you want to learn about, just about.
Becky, when you went to public school, back then, I don't imagine there were a lot of, visually impaired kids going to public school. Did you find the other kids supportive and helpful to you?
When I started in the eighth grade, I was in the regular school. You know, I don't remember that I had some friends, and of course, on in high school, with more girlfriends. And I didn't have to use a cane back then, but I had to always be sitting on the front row. And of course, in the last couple of years there of high school, I couldn't see that blackboard. But as far as the students, I never had any problem with them, and several of them were, you know, good friends. But I think, you know, when you feel like you're a little bit different, you may tend to be just a little more standoffish, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't think I was quite as outgoing then.
Hey, Becky SB here. I have a question for you, because it's a question I like to ask a lot of blind people that are cane users. When did you decide you really needed the cane, or if you did decide you needed to really need the cane? I know I made a decision in high school because I knew I was going to get killed, but I think that's a real big decision for people to decide, all right, I'm blind enough, I really need to have the cane.
Oh, that's a good question, Dennis, because that was a rather dramatic moment. I had started work, and my office was just outside a couple of the wards there, and I knew my way around real well, and I could see pretty good to get around. But one day I was walking down the hall without a cane, and I just ran all over this little patient, little old lady patient, because I didn't see her. And I didn't, thank God, I didn't knock her down, but I was very embarrassed. And I thought, from then on, I'll be using a cane just to make sure everybody knows I'm coming and they better get out of the way.
At what point in your life did you lose your vision, or do you still have some?
No, I don't have any. I don't even have light perception now. But with RP, it seems like you spend most of your life going blind, or the kind that I had. Since being in on the computer, I have learned that there are lots of other types of RP, and there are people like Parker who kept his vision until he was, you know, much older than me. You know, I was losing it most of my life, but by the time I was probably in my very early 30s, I didn't have any usable vision. Stephen was born when I was 27, and I could see what he looked like. He looked just like his daddy. At that point in my 30s is when I really felt that I had no more usable vision.
Becky, I just want to thank you so much for coming on. You were a great interview. I don't know why you were nervous, because you did a fantastic job. We all knew you would. We've got faith in you, girl.
Well, you know, I was very comfortable with Susie, and I knew, that it was... Susie is a very good interviewer, and I really wasn't that anxious about the interview because of Susie being Susie.
Becky, we all appreciate you doing this, and I know that you're famous among all of us for wearing something as special as a hair bow. What is it you always like to wear as a hair bow?
Now, according to Parker and a lot of people, I sometimes tend to forget to put my mic. I wear a headset all the time. I forget to put my mic, pull my mic down, and it's still up in the air, you know. And so Parker's always telling me, "You got your hair bow on."
Vicki, I'm wondering, since you did all this transcribing for a psychiatrist all those years, did you learn anything by osmosis? In other words, can you psychoanalyze people?
I didn't get my degree, Lee. They wouldn't give me my degree, but I can, you know, as much typing in of people's cases and all, I have gotten very familiar with the psychiatry and have a real respect for it.
Does it make you understand the people on the site better?
Well, I'm still trying to figure Terry out, but other than that, you know.
Vicki, I've been so delighted to know you all these years, and it's just, you're one of my favorite folks on this site. I want to ask you, in your work time, did you go from typewriters to computers to, they were constantly changing equipment out in my office in clerical work, and I just wondered how many changes you had to make in all those years of your clerical transcribing and stuff.
Boy, you know it, Janice. We did start out early with the, well, actually, I did use a, it wasn't the Selectric, but it was, you know, it was an electric typewriter. I can remember when I was in school, in high school, I would type up my reports, and Daddy had gotten an old manual Underwood typewriter, and those keys would go down probably 2 inches, you know, before they hit the letter on the bar there. But as far as working, yeah, we went from electric typewriters, and I guess it was in the 80s, wasn't it, when we started getting computers. And thankfully, there were a couple of other blind people who worked in the hospital, not in my department, but and one of my friends, she was exposed to the computer first, and so, but she was a smart girl, but she learned how to use that computer with medical transcription. And so when come to Department of Psychiatry, who was usually, you know, down the totem pole, they asked me, well, what are you going to be able to do this, or what's going to happen, you know? And I said, well, yeah, I'm going to be able to learn it. I have friends who are doing the same thing, and they're learning it, so I can learn it. So they did send me back over to rehab for, I think, 2 weeks. And I learned more about using the computer. So we'd have one headset on for the transcription transcriber, and one headset on for the computer. We must have looked a sight. Yes, indeed, we did see quite a few changes take place, didn't we, Janice? But most of them were for the better, because, boy, the computer, when you could make a correction so easily with the computer rather than trying to, well, if you couldn't see, you couldn't make a correction on the electric typewriter. You had to get somebody usually to make it for you. I mean, I know we had that old white correct-a-type, was it called, that we could, if we knew where we could space back and stick that little piece of paper down there and type. Oh, gosh. I when I think about that, I'm wondering how I managed to work that long. But I was glad to get, really, I was really tickled to get to the computer, because it was quite a step forward.
If I had had the computer when I was doing general transcription, I would have really loved it. But back then, it was correct the type on carbon copies, and it was crazy with the typewriter. It was horrible.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about all those darn carbon copies we had to make. I know, because I would do my report. They did their reports in two sections, and one part would go in the open chart, and the other part would go in the confidential chart. So we'd make three copies of the first one, and it seemed like it was like seven copies of the, or vice versa. But anyway, there were a lot of carbon copies, and boy, I was glad to give that up.
And one more little thing, you do know that if you reached up, and like I had to do type, I was typing child welfare cases, and they were sad ones, and I'd reach up and brush tears, and I'd come home with a black eye because I'd get carbon all over my fatigue.
I can remember when I used to run the mimeograph machine when I didn't, you know, sometimes I didn't have anything to do. I did type up some of those stencils, I guess, but I didn't like it because, you know, you had to use that inky stuff to make those corrections. But boy, man, have we come a long ways.
Are there other people with questions? Okay, Dennis, you can go ahead with the second question.
No, it was already asked. Janice asked it. I was curious how you got into computers. Maybe you want to tell us how you got into voice chat. Now, that might be interesting.
Well, actually, you know, when I got my computer, I didn't know anything about voice chat. And I got the computer at home, for home. Now, you know my memory doesn't remember all that stuff, Dennis, but I don't know how I finally found out about For the People. Somebody must have told me about it. But anyway, I came on to that site. And, of course, you know, back then you didn't want to really talk. You didn't want anybody to know who you were. That was crazy. But anyway, I do remember the first person that I spoke to was Jennifer. And the rest is history.
Becky, you said you've made a lot of use of Braille, of course, down through the years. How about a relic from the past, the machine, since you're talking about some of the machines? The Braille writer. Did you use one, and do you still have one today? Because I still do.
Oh, yes. I've got that Perkins Braille writer that weighs a ton. It's probably close to, well, I told somebody it was 100 years old, but they said it couldn't be because they haven't been around that long. But I'm sure, without a doubt, that it was one of the first ones. And it actually came to our family when I was in high school. I don't really remember using it in high school because I didn't know Braille then. That's right. I didn't learn Braille until I went to the rehab center. But I do have one that I've had for many, many years. I still use it. I think I had to have it worked on one time. I used it when I would get my charts. Someone would come in and read the names on the charts and the history number, the admission and discharge date and whose service they were on. And I would attach that to each chart. And so that's how I kept up with what I had. And somebody called up and said, we need the chart on so-and-so. Then I could go to it and pull it. And occasionally, when I wasn't doing transcription, if I was caught up, I would go out and help cover the phones at the front desk, and I could take down, you know, telephone numbers and names for doctors to call back and things like that. So, yes, it stayed with me, and I still have it today, and I still use it to write my passwords.
Did you have any experience that stands out in your mind at work as being unique or funny or embarrassing?
Well, the most embarrassing thing was when I ran over that little lady and I started using a cane. Gosh, you would think I would remember. I mean, 35 years is a long time. It had to have been things that happened, but that's the thing that stands out in my mind, is that little lady. Bless her heart. She probably didn't know what hit her. Of course, thank God I was only maybe 20 years old then. So, and I was, you know, thin. Well, not thin. I've never been thin. But I certainly didn't weigh what I weigh today.
Becky, I'm curious about something. In this day and age, a website can pop up overnight and it can be gone next week. But back in the days, I think For the People pretty well held everything down. When you guys as a little group have decided that you wanted to go in a different direction, and I know with that cloak and dagger stuff, it can be stressful and stuff like that. I can't imagine you being in the middle of all that. How did you handle all that?
Well, once we made the decision to do that, then we sort of threw ourselves into the site here, and that kept us busy. You know, we didn't have time to worry about anything else, and we were just trying to make a new way for us and for other people. I mean, you're right, that was a very early time, and I think, what was the other one before For the People? The audio tips, I think, was the first one I'm not sure if I ever went over there, but yeah, there was a lot to do. There's a lot to do to start up a site, and we were very serious about it, and we put a lot of time and thought into it. And, you know, when you're working with people like Terry and Dennis and Barry, let's see, who else was Miss Anita, of course, and Clifford. Boy, we had a really good group, and we worked together real well.
And Parker.
Oh, I didn't forget Parker. Didn't you hear me say Parker?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, me. Anyone else have a question that you would like to ask? Well, Becky, I just want to thank you so much for allowing me to interview you and call you on the phone the other day. I just kind of feel like we've always known each other, and we've had so many things that's kind of similar happen. And next month, I'll be interviewing Dennis, known as Start Button. So, Terry and Parker, I guess you all need to get going and finding me some other people. Again, thanks everyone for coming out. When I looked last time, we had 27 people in there. So, getting to know you, it's real, and you have so many friends. So again, until next time, have a great week and a great month.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.